To review that, or everybody is completely happy with that. Excellent, because we don't have time to review it. So this is at the level of the group. So at the level of the algebra, remember, you write this as e to the I h, or j, and these are the generators. So what do we get in terms of the generators? What are the j's? What do they have to satisfy? So it's too trivial? Yes? Excellent. So this condition means that they have to be Hermitian, or J, sorry. And this condition means that they have to be traceless. Excellent. So that's very good. Okay. So for SU2, we only have three generators, right? So people usually talk about the Pauli matrices as being generators of these, but those are not the most convenient generators. In fact, in order to understand what the most convenient generators are, let me give you a little bit of the math definition of a Lie algebra. Okay. So people would start and say that a Lie algebra, well, as any algebra, is a vector space, okay, with some multiplication. Okay. And what is the multiplication? The multiplication is a map from the algebra, or the tensor product of the algebra to itself. Okay. And in the case of Lie algebras, such a product is anti-symmetric, okay? And that's why we like to denote it by a commutator, because this is naturally something that reminds us of something that is anti-symmetric. And in the case of Lie algebras, there is another property that they satisfy, which is the Jacobi identity. So this is supposed to be enough to construct everything. In fact, nowadays, we even know something that sounds very, very interesting, which is that even in just in four dimensions, if you just try to scatter spin one particles and just impose Poincaré invariance, Poincaré is just a group, right? It's one of these examples. It's just a Lie group. Just by imposing that condition, you find that the interaction of the particles, just the three particle vertices, will have to be governed by a quantity which will do the following. Imagine that you have some generators for this algebra. This is a vector space, so you can choose a basis, right? So you can choose a basis. So choose basis of a vector space. That can always be done, right? So this is your basis. Now, the product is supposed to close in the algebra, and therefore, we are supposed to get a linear combination of the bases. Sometimes you can write like this. Okay? Now, just the three particle interactions in four dimensions for particles of spin one are consistent if and only if these numbers here are precisely the couplings of the particles and if they satisfy the Jacobi identity. When you plug this in here, this will turn into an identity between the Fs. So somehow Poincaré is telling you that these objects are naturally rooted in physics in four dimensions, just coming from nowhere. So that's very exciting. And that's also another motivation for studying them carefully. Okay, very good. So we have this. But there is yet another way to think about this structure, which is a little bit more strange, which is the following. Up to this point, I've been talking about abstract objects. I'm not thinking about these as being matrices or anything. So this is just an abstract product, and these are just abstract properties. If we want to think about these as matrices, the reason we think about them as matrices is that we think about them as acting on a vector space, on some vector space. Okay? So some element of the algebra acts on the vector space, on some element in the vector space, and gives you another element in the vector space. Okay? Now, such a vector space would be the carrying space of a representation of this guy, because if the dimension of this is some r, then all the elements in the algebra can be represented as R by R matrices, because those will be linear operators acting on the vector space. Now, the other way to think about these guys is as a way of the algebra acting on itself, right? We said we can have a vector space here, but why not choose the same vector space that the algebra represents, right? That the algebra is a vector space. We started with that. So we can choose to act with the algebra on itself. How can we do that? Well, we need a map from the algebra, something that acts on the algebra and sends you back to the algebra. But that's precisely what this is, this product. Okay? So we think about, say, x with an empty space here as a map from the algebra to the algebra. Okay? So for every element in the algebra, we have an operator that acts on a vector space, and the vector space is the algebra itself. So this gives you a natural representation that comes with every algebra, and that's called the adjoint representation. And it's called the adjoint because you cannot get rid of it. It's always there for any algebra. Okay, very good. Do you remember yesterday I asked you, well, somebody told me that I have to be careful and not say homework, because homework has a precise meaning for you guys, which is the things that you have to do to get a grade. So I should say that whenever I refer to something that you have to do for the lecture, for the next lecture, is then a preparation problem, something like that. It's not a homework. So in yesterday's preparation problems, that's so long and I'm not going to be able to say it anymore. We talk about, or I ask you, to find out in Wikipedia the Gell-Mann matrices, right? And then for SU3, and then rewrite, find linear combinations so that everybody were eigenvectors of lambda 3 and lambda 8, okay? Well, this is the precise sense in which I meant that. So you want lambda 3 and lambda 8 to be operators acting on the algebra through this map, so they represent an operator. So lambda 3 is an operator. You plug here elements in the algebra, and you get back an element in the algebra. So the idea was to find linear combinations so that if you plug something here, you get the same guy back multiplied by a number. Now, what are those numbers? Well, remember, in Gell-Mann's matrices, lambda 3 and lambda 8 are Hermitian, right? So what are the eigenvalues? What can only be the eigenvalues of a Hermitian matrix or a Hermitian operator? They must be real numbers. Very good. So we learned that for SU3, the eigenvalues of these two matrices are always supposed to be real. Okay? Did you find the linear combinations? Yes? Excellent. How many people try? Very good. How many people succeeded? Excellent. So everybody who tried succeeded. That's very good. Okay. Now, of course, you all have done that for SU2. Okay? Even though probably you didn't realize it, that you were doing it, you have done it for SU2. For SU2, remember, if we have the Pauli matrices, sigma 3, sigma 1, and sigma 2, it's not true. Say, we can choose sigma 3 to be the special generator. And it's not true that this happens, right? This is not true. Right? Sigma 1 and sigma 2 are not eigenvectors of sigma 3 in the sense that I defined here. So what do you usually do? You find a linear combination that you call sigma plus minus. And the reason is that you're looking for eigenvectors of sigma 3. So you find linear combinations called sigma plus minus so that they are eigenvectors of sigma 3. And now the other nice thing is that when you commute them, you find back the special generator. Now, sigma 3 for SU2, lambda 3 and lambda 8 for SU3, these special generators are called the Cartan generators. But they are not really special. It's not that they are, oh, well, I mean, you really have to see it and wait until Gell-Mann tells you that lambda 3 and lambda 8 are diagonal. No, all you have to do is to find in the algebra the maximal set of elements that commute among themselves, okay? So the maximal abelian algebra of subalgebra of an algebra is called the Cartan subalgebra. Now, in the case of SU2, you can only, in other words, you want to find the maximal set of objects that can be diagonalized simultaneously, just like in quantum mechanics, you want to find operators that commute among themselves. For SU2, you find that you can never find two guys that commute. So you can only choose one, any one that you like, and then you can try and find eigenvectors of that guy. Okay? In SU3, you can do the same thing, and you find that there are only two matrices that you can diagonalize simultaneously. So that's why Gell-Mann chose lambda 3 and lambda 8 to be diagonal, because you can do it, because they commute among themselves. So you can diagonalize them and use them as the basis of the Cartan subalgebra to build the whole structure of the algebra. Okay. So let's see. We only have 5 more minutes to finish the review of Lie groups and Lie algebras. So let's see how we do it. Okay, very good. Is everything clear up to this point? We haven't done anything fancy. Yes?
Why are the linear combinations of other operators not also, like, why can't you just write the set of generators in terms of those and then everything?
Why? Yeah, so is your question, why should we struggle and find these special linear combinations? Why don't we just take any generators and deal with them? Is that the question? Or why are they special? Is that the question? Excellent, because that's what we're going to discuss now. The reason they are special is the following. Remember, in order to find the representations of SU2, you didn't do it with these guys. You did it with these guys. And the reason is that they behave like creation and annihilation operators, right? So the idea was, in SU2, let me remind you, that if you have some vector space, and you have some element in the vector space, okay, and imagine that you act on it by sigma plus, okay, and imagine that this element in the vector space B had some eigenvalue under sigma 3. It was an eigenvector of sigma 3 with eigenvalue lambda. So what is this guy? Is this guy also an eigenvector of sigma 3 when I apply sigma plus to lambda? Is it or is not? Yes, it is. How can you tell that it is? Well, you have to apply sigma 3 to it and then see if you get back the same vector, right? Can you see that if you apply sigma 3 to it, you will get back the same vector? Well, yes, because of these commutation relations. And not only that, this guy will belong to the vector, to the sub-vector space of this with eigenvalue lambda plus 1. Right? So this acts like a raising operator. Okay? You increase the value of this by 1. And sigma minus acts as a lowering operator. So these are the ladder operators. And remember, if you want a representation which is finite dimensional, you have to assume that the object is annihilated at some point when you apply the sequence of sigma pluses, okay? And that leads you to something very important, which is that all the dimensions, or the dimensions of the representations, are given or are classified in this way. So these ladders produce the representations. Is that something that you know very well? That the representations of SU2 are of that form? I hope you do, because what we're going to say now depends very strongly on that. So you know, for SU2, you can have a singlet, which means that the group acts, that the algebra acts on it and nothing happens. You can have a doublet, which is dimension 2, a triplet, which is dimension 3. Which one is the adjoint representation? Spin what? Which of these guys is the adjoint representation? Excellent. Spin 1. Yeah. And how do you know that? Well, because the adjoint representation had to have dimension 3, and this is the only one that has dimension 3. Okay, very good. Okay, if you don't remember this, let's just do something with pictures, which might be easier to remember. So we draw a line, and we represent on the line the following. We're going to draw a real line because we know that the eigenvectors of sigma 3 must have eigenvalues which are real. So we are going to represent the eigenvalues on some plane, on some real axis. Okay? So since we have only sigma 3, there is only one generator that we are studying as the operator, and the other ones would be the eigenvectors, we only have one line. And we represent the origin by saying that this is somehow sigma 3 sitting there. Okay? Because sigma 3 commutes with itself, and then you get 0. And the 0 is somewhere here. Now, when you apply sigma plus, you get plus 1, say. So we can put it here. And sigma minus, you get it here. Okay. So on this line, we are representing the eigenvalues, which we concluded are real numbers, so we can draw them there. Now, representations. We can also draw the eigenvalues of some particular representation. So the singlet will sit here. The doublet will have eigenvalues that sit here. The triplet will be the adjoint representation, so it coincides with this, and so on. So the dimension, so you can have a dimension 4 that will sit here together with these guys. So the dots here are called roots. Okay? And just the diagram with the dots is called the root diagram. And the excess are called weights. And the diagram with the excess is called the weight diagram. Okay? Very good. So how can this help us? We knew everything about SU2, so it doesn't seem very useful. Well, I want to claim that just by knowing what happens with SU2, you can build any algebra by playing some games, which I'm about to tell you what the game is. So the game is the following. Actually, the game follows from this identity. If you have some element in the Cartan subalgebra, imagine that you have, this is your Cartan subalgebra. Now we said that we're going to find a basis for the algebra in such a way that everybody else will be eigenvectors of these guys. So if we have, we call the other ones E. So one particular guy will have eigenvector, eigenvalue alpha I when we commute it with HI. So I is equal to, so HI this is just sigma 3 for SU2. And the whole set of these guys is just lambda 3 and lambda 8 for SU3. But we can imagine that there will be more Cartan generators if we are considering the most general algebra, right? So we can label them with an index I and label the eigenvalue by alpha I. So people like to think about this as a vector. So if we have R guys here, so the dimension of this algebra, let's call it R. So R is equal to 1 here and R is equal to 2 here. This is called the rank of the group of the algebra. Okay? Now, people like to think about the R numbers. You get a set of R numbers associated with each eigenvector as a vector in Rn. So they label these guys by their vector. So alpha defines a vector in Rn, or in Rr, sorry. So here we have just a single line. In the case of SU3, we will have an R2. So we are supposed to draw these guys on R2. So anyone who did the homework knows that these eigenvectors, these eigenvalues, are actually real numbers. So they can look at each guy and collect the eigenvalues. And then you will find the following. On R2, of course, the two Cartan generators, lambda 1, lambda 8, and lambda 3, they have zero eigenvalue with respect to themselves. So they must sit at the origin. So this is a degenerate point. Okay. Now, probably, you guys found that if you take in the Gell-Mann matrices lambda 1 plus I lambda 2, you find one guy that has eigenvalue plus 1 with respect to lambda 3 and eigenvalue 0 with respect to lambda 8. Okay? Did you find that? If you take lambda 1 plus I lambda 2, this combination, you find that it has eigenvalue 1 with respect to lambda 3 and 0 with respect to lambda 8. Well, we draw it here, okay? Let's call that one alpha 1. Now, that guy, there was also the guy with a minus here, so you find plus minus 1, so we put it here, okay? Now, this looks very much like the SU2 subalgebra, the SU2 algebra that we had there. Indeed, that's what it is. Yes? Yeah. The dots represent the eigenvalues of the algebra thought of as a vector space on which the algebra itself acts, right? So we are looking for eigenvectors of sigma 3, okay? So sigma plus and sigma minus provide eigenvectors of sigma 3. Sigma 3 thought of, this is confusing because we are using the same objects all over and over again, as operators and as the elements in the vector space. So sigma 3 acts on the whole algebra. When it acts on sigma 3, you get 0. So the action on the vector sigma 3 is 0. So we draw it here at the origin. The action on the vector sigma plus gives you plus sigma plus. So the eigenvalue is plus 1. So we draw it here. Likewise, we get something here. Okay. So that's what we're going to be drawing all over and over again. Okay. The eigenvectors. We are going to build everything using the eigenvectors, and we're going to draw all the information in terms of the eigenvalues. The eigenvalues are going to be represented in an R-dimensional lattice. Okay? Now, there is something interesting here. Yes?
How do you find the starting point of weights?
Here? Oh, the weights? Yeah. Well, for the weights, you just have to classify the representations, right? And then you see, that's something very important. You can start with this weight here, right? And now this representation is such that if you apply sigma plus to it, remember sigma plus sends everything and shifted it by 1, right? If you apply sigma minus, it also shifted by 1. So if you apply sigma plus to this, it will take you outside. So sigma plus is defined so that it annihilates this weight. Sigma minus moves this guy here, and if you apply it twice, you get 0. So that's the action of the algebra on the two-dimensional representation.
So the crosses are like something that the sigmas act on. Like
yeah, they are the eigenvalues of the vectors in the vector space on which the algebra is acting on, right? And that's very good. So it's very good that you mentioned. So let me say this again. So this cross is actually different from this cross. So what I meant from this cross means the thing is that there are, well, I don't have an infinite number of labels, but so this cross really means the spin zero representation. These two guys together are together as the spin 1/2 representation, okay? They don't talk to this one, to this cross. These crosses are what we call the spin 1 representation, and so on, okay? Yes.
You have to find a starting point.
Yeah, precisely. Imagine that I did something silly, like imagine that there is some eigenvalue sitting at some strange value square root of 2. Then by applying sigma minus or sigma plus, I will never finish. I will never get a diagram that looks symmetric with respect to this. So that's precisely, that's why, well, I was hoping that you have a solid understanding of SU2. But, right, it doesn't matter, really. Let's just take for granted that SU2 has representations of different dimensions. There is a singlet, there is a doublet, there is a triplet, and so on, right? So, and here, all I'm doing is drawing the eigenvalues of the corresponding corresponding vectors when sigmas act on them. Okay, when sigma 3 acts on them. So these are the eigenvalues when the Cartan generator acts on the objects. Okay. So let me mention something else that follows from here, which is very easy, which is that if you take the Hermitian conjugate of this, if you take the dagger of this formula, so take the dagger of this formula, what do you find? These guys are Hermitian, right? So they go back to themselves. When you apply the dagger of this, you get the commutator reverse. So if you put it back, you pay it the price of a minus sign. So you find that the dagger of E alpha actually has eigenvalues minus alpha. So whenever there is some guy at some point, you must have the guy with eigenvalue, which is minus the eigenvalue of the original one. So that's the other rule of the game. Okay. Now, what is the game we want to play? We want to play the following. We want to explore, or we want to try to find all possible Lie algebras which have rank 2. Okay. So we know we have to find something on R2. The possible eigenvalues will be vectors in R2, okay? Yes?
It's not quite intuitive to me. Why should these vectors be real? Why?
Oh, because, oh, you mean these numbers here?
Yeah.
Because they are the eigenvalues of a Hermitian operator, yeah. Right? That's crucial. That's a very good question. Yeah. Otherwise, we couldn't draw them on the plane. So that's very, very important, that they are real numbers. And as many as the number of Cartan generators. So with rank 1, we are done. This is all there is. Now we want to classify all possible algebras with rank 2. Let's see if we succeed. So what are the rules of the game? I'll give you the rules of the game and try to convince you to practice and see if you can get all of them. Yes?
Are you acting the EAs?
Are they also nothing? The E alphas are what? They are not Hermitian, no. Very good question, yes. So when you took the Gell-Mann matrices, well, even for SU2, right, the sigmas were Hermitian, right? But when you compute, when you define sigma 1 plus I sigma 2, it's not Hermitian anymore, right? The sigma plus and minus, they go to the other one under a dagger operation. So it's just a way, it's a trick. So we are now allowing ourselves to multiply the elements by complex numbers as well, and it's just a trick in order to classify these algebras and construct their representations, okay? It's just a trick, but very, very good question. Yeah, You say, well, if you're doing SUN, what do you mean? How come that this guy is not itself? That's your question. But you should have asked that question when you did SU2, right? How come that J plus goes to J minus under a dagger under the dagger conjugation, or sigma plus goes to sigma minus, depending on your favorite notation, right? But under dagger, this guy goes here, and this guy goes there. Very good. So what are the rules of the game? We want to find all possible Lie algebras with rank 2. So every Lie algebra will have one of these guys here. Now, we have to find ways of putting roots. So remember, these dots are roots. That's what they are called. We have to find ways of putting roots in this diagram in such a way that the roots we draw... You okay? Okay. Very good. We have to find ways of putting dots here in such a way that we have to draw more roots, right? This is just SU2. We want to find something more interesting. In particular, we want to find SU3. So the rules of the games are we want to draw more roots here, which will be eigenvalues of the other generators with respect to the two Cartan subalgebra elements. So we'll put here H1 and H2. For SU3, these are the two guys. In such a way, so the eigenvalues with respect to H1, we will put them here. This will be the x-axis. And the eigenvalues with respect to H2, we will put them here. So we have to draw dots here, roots here, in such a way that all the dots we draw happen to look like representations under this SU2 subalgebra. And moreover, once we are done drawing dots, any line that passes through the origin is supposed to represent as well an SU2 subalgebra, and every other element that looks in the diagram is supposed to fall under representations of SU2 with respect to that subalgebra. I hope you didn't understand anything that I said, right? Because it was a long, long sentence without commas or anything. But let's see how it works in practice, okay? Well, what's the simplest thing that I can do? I know that if I have an SU2 subalgebra here, I can put dots. Imagine that I put dots along this axis. Well, they will all look, from the point of view of that algebra, they will all have x eigenvalues that are zero. So they all look like singlets with respect to this guy. So that surely will be allowed. I can put an alpha 2 here. I know from that argument that if I put alpha 2, I must have a minus alpha 2 here, right? Every dot that I draw, there must be a minus sign, a minus alpha as well. Okay, so I have these guys, these two guys, with a linear combination of these edges, forms another SU2 subalgebra. So now you twist your heads and look at these guys and say, oh, this is an SU2 subalgebra. So the other dots must be in a representation of this guy. Now if you turn your head around and look at this guy, these guys are singlets with respect to this SU2. So everything in the algebra here satisfies the rules I said, even though you didn't understand what I said. Now you will understand the meaning by seeing the examples. Okay? So this is one way to draw dots in this diagram so that every line that passes through the origin forms an SU2 subalgebra, like this one, and every other dot in the diagram falls in a representation of that SU2 subalgebra. So this is one possibility. Could that be SU3? Well, count the number of generators. We have two Cartan plus 1, 2, 3, and 4. That's 6. So that cannot be SU3. Why could that possibly be? Well, we will see. That's right, SU2 cross SU2. And how do you know? Well, there is an SU2 that doesn't talk to anybody here because these guys are in a singular representation of this. This is SU2. And doesn't talk to anybody here because these are in a singlet. So these two SU2s don't talk to each other. So this is SU2 cross SU2, which is also known, or is isomorphic to S of 4. Okay. Let's try another one. Let's go back to our basic object and say, well, we tried to draw dots that were in the singlet. How about, can we do something more interesting? Can we draw dots that are in the doublet of this guy? Okay. Well, if we want to do that, we could draw them, say, here in the diagram. Right? Remember, we had this axis. This is the doublet with respect to this guy. The projection along the x-axis is supposed to give us the location with respect to the eigenvalues. Those are the eigenvalues with respect to some linear combination of the edges, okay, that will represent this SU2 subalgebra. So if I put them here, if I put a dot here, I know that I must put another one here, okay, because for every alpha, there is a minus alpha. So I just have to draw a line and go back here. Now, the rules of the game tells me that this subalgebra, everything else in the diagram must be in a representation of this subalgebra. So if I have this line, I'm supposed to draw the orthogonal guy and see whether these guys fall in representations of this guy. Now, if I choose this random, this angle at a random location, you will see that this projection here will give me something that doesn't look like anything sensible. Sorry, here. This projection will not look like anything sensible. It will not look like a weight of this SU2 subalgebra. How about if I move these guys up a little bit? Let me imagine, let me do the following. Let me put this guy here. So we know that it must be along this line to be in the doublet with respect to this SU2, somewhere along this line. So let me put it here. So I know that there will be a minus one here. Okay? So let me call this alpha 2 and this minus alpha 2. Now I have to tune this guy in such a way that if I twist my head and look along this line, these guys should be in representations of this SU2. But I know that there is any weight, a weight must be in halfway between this and this. So it must be somewhere here. So this guy better be orthogonal to this point along this line. Okay. But now there is a problem. I only have one guy. So with respect to this SU2, this guy cannot be a singlet. So it cannot be by itself. So what do I have to do to complete the representation? Well, from this point of view, for this to be a representation of this SU2, for this to be a doublet, I have to draw another one here. And now it's a nice doublet, this two, with respect to this SU2. Well, these two guys are a nice doublet with respect to this SU2. How about this guy? This guy is missing a pair, but also you know that there must be something else because there must be a minus alpha for this guy that goes here. So I claim that this is a consistent root system. So let's check the rules. The rules are for every alpha, there is a minus alpha. That's true. For every line that passes through the origin, I pretend that this is an SU2. And everybody else must be in a representation, in a valid representation of this SU2. So this is, according to this SU2, this is a doublet, this is a doublet, that's good. With respect to this SU2, this is a doublet, this is a doublet, we're done. With respect to this SU2, this is a doublet, and this is a doublet. So this must be right. How many elements are there? 2 here and 6 there. So this is 8. So this actually looks like SU3. Okay, it has a chance of being SU3. In fact, the ones who did the homework will find that precisely these locations correspond to the eigenvalues you found. Therefore, you will be convinced that this is actually the root diagram of SU3. So we did it with a singlet. We started with this. We did it with a singlet. We started with this, and we tried to put here a doublet. What's the natural next step? Yeah, no, because I want to compute the eigenvalue of this object, of this guy, with respect to this axis. So in order to compute the eigenvalue with respect to this Cartan sub, with respect to this SU2 subalgebra, I have to compute the projection of this guy along this axis. Okay? That's why I have to look from all I'm really doing is projecting some light on this side and seeing the shadow of every point along this line. And the shadows must fall precisely where the representations, where the weights of the corresponding representations should be. Okay? Now, I look at this one. I project a light on that, from that direction. And every dot must be in the correct spot for a weight under this SU2. The same thing with this one. And we do it with that, with light coming from the top. And then we see these two guys going precisely to the right place. Well, we started with singlets. Now we search for doublets, and we found them. So what's the natural next step? There you go. Let's see if we can do something with triplets. Okay. So a triplet with respect to this would be another copy of itself somewhere in the plane. If we put some light on the top, we will see that the shadows of these guys fall precisely on the three points. So that would be great. Now, for each guy, we know there must be a minus root. And these guys must also be precisely a triplet with respect to this guy. So we need them to be exactly in the same location as these ones. Okay? Okay, now I want you to help me out, okay? So everybody, let's try to follow this together. Let's check that this is a consistent root system. Let's take this subalgebra, right? Let's shine some light from this direction, right? Now, this point, does it fall in a consistent weight? Is it a consistent representation of this subalgebra? If so, what is the representation? It's a singlet. Great. How about these two guys? They fall. They form a doublet. Here, singlet and a doublet. Okay. How about from this point of view, these two guys? Just take this SU2. What is this? It's a triplet, and these guys are a triplet. So great. So we succeeded. This actually works. Well, then there must be some algebra that has two elements from here, and how many elements? We have 6, 7, 8. Do you know any algebra that has 10 elements? There must be some, because we succeeded in finding one for here, there. Well, today in the tutorial, you will do many things with SO groups. So if you compute the dimension of SO5, it turns out to be 10. So this better be SO5. Which happens to be the same as SP4. So I'll tell you what SP4 is in a second. Now, I mean, like in physics, every time we see something working for 1, 2, 3, we should just keep going, right? So we are on a roll, so let's do 4, 5. And so let's keep going. Okay, so the next step is to try 4. Do you think we're going to succeed? This starts to look a little bit scary, right? Because look, all the dots here. Now, for each one of them, we are supposed to have a minus 1, a minus alpha, here, and here. And now the game begins, right? Well, let's see. What do you want to do first? maybe we can do, I don't know, we can do this one. Okay. Well, with respect to this one looks like a, this one looks like what? This one looks like a singlet. Okay. This one looks like a double, like a doublet. But these guys look a little bit funny. So your suggestion is to include more guys. Yeah, the problem is that if I draw, you see, everything is very sensitive to the angles that I choose to draw these things. So if I don't draw the angles correctly, it's going to be hard to see. Yeah, let's see. Well, let's see. Well, let me choose this one first. These three, okay? And shine some light. Now, this one seems to fall nicely as a doublet, but it's missing a partner, right? Where should the partner be? Well, it turns out that the partner should be here, right? This is starting to look complicated. This guy is also a doublet with respect to this, and this guy is a singlet. So that seems to work. Okay. Well, if this guy is here, there must be a minus alpha here. Okay. Well, this started to look like something nice. So it better be something sensible. Well, since I'm over my 15 minutes introduction to Lyapunov, I'll let you check that if you choose the angles and everything correctly, this actually works out. Okay? It works out to satisfy all the rules I told you. Now, what can this be? Well, we have 2 plus 12 guys. So this is 14 elements. Any algebra that has 14 elements? Well, probably nothing that you have heard of. And it's because it doesn't seem to enter in physics, at least not in the physics that we learned in particle physics, but it does enter in a string theory, and it's called a G2. Note the following. This guy, here, here, and here, these guys were the SU3 subalgebra with the SU3 root system we found. So it's as if we can attach some guys to the SU3 root system and produce another root system that is allowed, okay? Such a thing is actually possible sometimes, and that's why these algebras, or these weird things, are called exceptional, because what happens is that you take the root system of something that you know, and you start playing with it, adding more dots, and you find that sometimes you find allowed root systems. So an exercise for you is to show that if you go to the next step, we did the four-dimensional representation, so go to the next step, and you will find nothing. Okay? It's impossible to construct any other root system that is allowed in rank 2. So we are done. This is the whole theory of Lie groups for rank 2. Yes?
Does it matter that some of the SU2s that you have there are, like, longer than...
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah, any line. This is very, very complicated game. Yeah. Well, you know, it's guaranteed. We did the derivation. It's guaranteed that for every guy here, there is a minus guy. And you find some linear combinations of these guys so that they form literally an SU2 subalgebra. And then everybody else must fall in some representation of it for this to be consistent. Okay? So let me tell you something else. And then we will end with that, because that's the end of the whole Lie algebra story, which is the following. People like to talk about or separate. So all the non-zero roots, they call them delta. They said the set of, this is the set of all non-zero roots. Okay. Now the people realize that if you look at a root system, you can always choose a line, some axis, that separates the roots in two sets. Okay. Here we do this, and we separate the roots in this way. We separate this tree from this tree. And the separation is the following. If you take everybody in one set, you can get the other ones by shuffling a minus sign, by reflecting. Okay? So it's obvious that we can get that there is always a line that allows us from a reflection to get everything else, right? In all the diagrams we did. Now the guys that belong to one of the halves, we just choose to call them positive and the other ones negative, right? So here, alpha 1 and alpha 2, we choose them to be positive. These ones to be negative. So the set of all roots splits into the set of positive roots and the set of negative roots. So these are called positive, and these are called negative roots. And in the set of positive roots, there is even a subset of guys that are even more special, okay? So there is a subset here of guys that are very special. These are the roots, alpha, that cannot be written as the sum of two other roots in delta plus. Okay? Well, what do I mean by that? Delta plus here contains alpha 1 and alpha 2. Can I write alpha 2 as a sum of two guys? No, this is trivial. There are only two guys. So these two guys belong to this very special set. In fact, the very special set corresponds to the whole set here. But let's look at something more interesting here. You see that this guy can be written as the sum of this plus this, as a vector. If you add this vector, you get this vector. So this one is not simple. It's somehow composed from the other two, right? So this set is called the set of simple roots. So in this case, these are the simple roots. So let me call them by a triangle. Because this one is a sum of these two. So this one is composed, in a sense. Okay? Here, this would be the simple roots. What are the simple roots here? We draw our line. We say these are delta plus. The simple roots will happen to be this and this. Because we can get this one by adding this vector to this one, and this one to this one. This is more tricky. This is trickier. Can anyone tell me what the two simple roots are here? So everybody here on the top are the positive roots. So we have to find two guys that cannot be written as the sum. Okay, I have to extend this definition a little bit. As linear combinations of two other roots in delta plus with positive coefficients. Okay? Sorry? It's not obvious, yeah, but the answer is yes. There are always R of them. In this case, two. So this would be one, right? Oh. Now, doesn't look obvious, but this is the other one. So the claim is that there are only two, and these are the two. So your exercise is to show that there are linear combinations of these two guys, of these two vectors, okay, with positive coefficients that generate these other four guys. Okay? So in the final 2 minutes, we're almost done because let's do the following. People You see that once you give the positive roots, once you give the simple roots, sorry, to somebody, then they can build everything else from that information. Okay? So people realize that the simple roots and how they are distributed on the plane define completely your algebra. So all you have to know is where the simple roots are, and then you're done. So people like to encode the information of where the simple roots are in a diagram. Okay? So the claim is that the simple roots determine the whole algebra. So people came out with the following diagrammatic convention. They say every simple root, let's draw them as a knot. Okay? In this case, we have two. And the angle between them will be represented by lines that we draw between the two knots. Okay? So if you have an angle that is 90 degrees, the convention is don't draw anything. And it's a natural convention, you see, because when we did SU2, just SU2, rank 1, there is only one simple root, right? Sigma plus. So for SU2, the diagram will just be a single knot. And if this is SU2 cross SU2 and they don't talk to each other, it's natural to draw them like two knots that don't talk to each other. Okay? So that must have been the origin of the convention that when they are separated 90 degrees, you don't put anything. You don't draw any line among them, between them. So this corresponds to 1 and 2. So how about here? Well, there are two roots, simple roots. And we have this angle here, which I'll let you work out. And when this happens, when this angle happens between the two roots, you put one line. Okay? When this happens, you put two lines. And when this happens, I'll let you work out all these angles. You put three lines. Okay? That's the convention. So anybody who wants to tell you about G2, instead of telling you G2 and the root diagram, all they have to tell you is this diagram. They tell you there are two roots, and there is an angle that you can read from the diagram. Okay? And this is just a convention. This is a diagrammatic convention for denoting the angle between the roots. Now, there is something else that, let's see, I should really start. Maita, is that your name? Yes, that's that. How do you pronounce it?
Maita.
Okay, yeah. So Maita pointed out that some of these guys actually have different length, right? The same happened here, but not there, okay? So when there are different length, we also denote, we also have to introduce that information somehow. And the way we do it is by saying, introducing like a greater or a small sign to say that this one is has a length that is bigger than this one, larger than that one. So that's what you do there. Here we don't have to do anything because all the roots, all the simple roots have the same length. So there is nothing we have to do. Okay? Now you can ask, well, what happens when you go higher in rank? Okay? So what happens when you go higher ranks? Okay? I'll let you do it as an exercise. What happens with rank 4? That should be a lot of fun, right? These are pictures in 3 dimensions, so you can still do them. Okay? I remember it. Yeah. I remember having a lot of fun trying to come up with all the root systems for rank 4. I don't remember if I succeeded. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Rank 3, I did it in while I was in the lecture. No, I'm kidding. No, just rank 3, thank you. Yeah. Well, if you do this for rank 3, you will find the following interesting fact. That this guy over there generalizes. Okay? This one generalizes a little bit. These ones generalize in two different ways. You can attach another node here, or to the other side. And this one, tough luck. There is no way to generalize. That stays there. There is nothing we can do with that guy. There is actually a kind of a silly way of generalizing this, which is that you draw it like this, and then you put another dot here. Okay? That looks kind of funny and stupid because it looks exactly the same as this one. But that's actually very, very interesting because this is SU4, right? This was SU3, this is SU4. And this guy happens to be, remember, the other one was SU2, was SO4. This guy happens to be SO6. Now, the fact that the two diagrams are the same is telling you something interesting. It's telling you that SO6, the algebra, is isomorphic to the algebra of SU4. So just from the diagrams, you know something that looks non-trivial. Rotations in 6 dimensions happen to be isomorphic, the group, as a group, as an algebra, to SU4 transformations. Very good. Now let's complete the picture. So let's go for any rank. This generalizes. Okay. With R nuts. People like to call this the series AR, and this corresponds to SU R plus 1, this algebra. Here, too, we can add as many nodes as we want. Okay? And this one is BR, which is SO 2 R plus 1 if we have R nodes. Here, we have to grow in the other direction. This one is called CR. Yeah, you see, people were not very inventive about the notation. ABC. Yeah. This is a SP2R. This one is interesting. This one grows in an interesting direction. This one grows here. And this is called D, of course. And this is SO2R. Okay? Yes?
Sorry, what's the difference between the second and the third?
The second and the third. You see, this root is greater than this one. It's larger. And all these roots have the same size as this one. So that's a very good question. So any roots that don't have any symbol to indicate that they are different are actually equal in length. Okay? So all these guys have the same length, and they are all smaller than this one. In this case, this one is smaller than all these guys. Okay? Now, it's quite remarkable that everything here enters in physics, right? These guys enter in particle physics. These guys are, well, rotations in any number of dimensions, even and odd dimensions. How about these guys? Do you know what these guys do? These guys are the algebra that generates a group that preserves symplectic metrics, a symplectic matrix. Well, that enters where? In the phase space in classical mechanics. So symplectic transformations are the bread and butter of classical mechanics. And the transformations that preserve the metric in that space, in phase space, are these guys precisely. So everything enters in physics here. Poor G2. G2 is not, as I said, well, maybe, who knows? Maybe from a string theory there is a way of, well, there are people using G2 to do very interesting things. But we will see. And in the final minus 4 minutes, let's say that when you reach a point in this D series, there is actually something exceptional that happens. Okay. In fact, there is also something exceptional that happens in this case. And these are really accidents. These are really accidents. You look at the root system, and you put more dots, and all of a sudden, it becomes an allowed root system. Take this guy. Now, it turns out that if you put another dot here, which you see is not allowed in these rules or these rules, you get an allowed root system that doesn't generalize. And this is called F4. It has rank 4. Okay? Okay. Now, if you take these guys, and you start with this one, say, destroy it like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You start with this root system. Just by chance, it so happens that you can put more dots to make an allowed root system. And what you have to do is to add another simple root in such a way that it's orthogonal to everybody except this guy. And you get an allowed root system. And this is called the root system of E6. Now, this starts to look like a series because you can grow it in one direction. So you can grow another dot, and it still becomes a root system. So you grow one guy on this side, and this is called E7. And you grow another guy on this side.
How do you know what's allowed and what's not allowed?
Well, precisely, as I told you. The rules of the game are as simple as I told you here. You draw the dots, and you try to check that along every single SU2 subalgebra, everything else falls in representations of that guy. And you will see your exercise is to show that there is nothing else. No matter how hard you try, you will not find anything else for rank 2. So in this case, in fact, I can tell you what happens. This is something very, very interesting. In the case, well, let me just say that if you keep trying, adding knots here, you don't find any allowed root system. So this is the end of the story. There is nothing else. And that's why they are called E, because they are called exceptional. Okay? So nothing to do with the fact that the next letter had to be an E. But, okay. So you get here. So there is something very interesting about this guy. The dimension of this guy is actually quite easy to remember. The reason is the following. You take the root system of SO16. Today you will learn how to compute, or you will learn the dimensions of this guy. So this guy has dimension 120 as a Lie algebra. Now this guy has a representation which is called a spinor representation. Now you take that weight and then you apply all these generators to it and you generate that representation and you draw the weight lattice of that guy together with the root lattice of this guy. And all of a sudden, you find an allowed root system. Now, that representation has 128 elements. So this is one of the spinor representations of this guy. And therefore, this algebra will end up having 248 elements. Okay. So of course, probably you have heard that E8 makes an appearance in string theory in many different ways. So that's basically the reason I wanted to get here, so that when we talk about E8, you have roughly an idea of what the object looks like. And probably you will have the same idea as I do, because, I mean, that's all I can tell you about E8, because, I mean, I can tell you the subgroups and so on. In fact, this whole lecture, so I basically cover in 1 hour and 10 minutes what is usually covered in a whole semester. So, this is only to encourage you to see that this is really spectacular, right? There is a theory, there is a math theory where we know everything there is to it, the whole classification, there is nothing else that escapes this. So it's just one of these very few examples when there is a complete mathematical theory that is not very difficult to study. So the idea of this lecture was not to actually teach you the whole thing, because it's impossible, but to encourage you to now go by yourself and study this thing. I mean, it's spectacular that everything can be done. It's completely classified. Everything is very important in physics. Even these guys, even particle theories, build grand unified theories based on E6. Learn how to compute the subgroups of these guys. Everything is can be done from the diagrams. That's spectacular. You don't even have to draw these diagrams anymore. All you have to do to draw these, which, by the way, are called Dynkin diagrams. And these Dynkin diagrams are the language of particle physicists. So you have to learn that in order to talk to people. I mean, people will just, when they talk about EA, they will just draw this. They will not do anything else. So that's something very important for you. Okay? So tomorrow, please, the other preparation exercise that we had yesterday is something that I want you to do tomorrow, for tomorrow. Okay? In fact, I want you to do more than that. I want you to explore. Remember, the exercise was a Lagrangian that was a GR Lagrangian, had GR, scalar fields, and it had a cosmological constant. So what I want you to do is to take the dimension Q, or the dimension of this where this object lives, and try to set it to one first, okay? Try to study that action in one dimensions, okay? There you will find that the metric doesn't have any kinetic terms, okay? You can integrate it out. So I want you to do that. I want you to integrate out the metric in that case. And I want you to try that for two dimensions, okay? So we will do all that tomorrow, but let's stop here because I'm supposed to stop.
Okay,